hear your rockin' band. Play it loud, don't you play it sweet. I gotta feel it in my feet. Boogie woogie rock and roll. Guitar picking with a lot of soul. Everybody's doing it. It's boogie woogie rock and roll. Boogie woogie rock and roll. Guitar picking with a lot of soul. Call it whatever you like. It's boogie woogie rock and roll. Dance, dance, dance. Everybody now dance, dance, dance.
Live from the 1480 studios in Phoenix, Arizona, KPHX. This is Breakthrough Entertainment. And this is our, what is it?
Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll Show.
It is our Boogie Woogie, I can't even say it.
It's Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll, baby.
Play me a song, Mr. Music Man.
Oh, is that it?
Well, no, that's the lyrics to this song. This song is Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll, sung by Blake Rain, the star of The Identical, the movie that we are celebrating today. Kind of, you'll see that it's kind of a mix of Elvis and some other things in there. We've got the inspiration for the movie on today, Elvis Wade.
Is it worth celebrating?
Definitely.
We'll have to find out. Oh, you saw it?
Worth celebrating?
Well, Elvis,
I thought you meant Elvis.
No, the movie.
We'll find out. Why do you want to spoil the,
A spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'm always jumping ahead.
I know you're jumping ahead. You're gonna, we got 3 hours to fill. What do you want to jam pack it all into 2 minutes?
All right, I won't say another word for 3 hours.
No, don't do that. You're the star of the producer show.
And who is that, Dave?
It is Eric Reinert, and I'm Dave Isaac, Joseph J. Erdo in studio, Greg Isaac, and Tricia all the way from out of town, and. So we're going to honor The Identical or Elvis or both?
Both. We got some Elvis Presley music on today. We've got some Elvis Wade music on today. And we also have on a lot of Blake Rain music from The Identical. It's got a great soundtrack. At the very least, tell you that.
Rain. It's Black Rain. That was a movie.
Okay. No, Purple Rain. That's a song.
No, there was Black Rain, Michael Douglas, Andy
Prince.
Garcia.
Yes.
Remember that? That's a pretty
Japan.
Good movie. Yeah. Was that Andy Garcia, too?
It was.
Yeah, remember the time he got killed?
Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah, but that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, welcome to 2014.
That was like 80s, wasn't it?
But we do want to, thoughts and prayers, of course, to Joan Rivers' family, friends. A very sad, tragic thing that happened, which, right, Tricia, that was unusual. I think there's an investigation going on.
There probably should be. That sounds to me, they said it was a minor throat procedure, but somebody of her age that's had a lot of surgeries already to put her under conscious sedation in an outpatient setting is very risky, especially with her age.
That's very sad.
I probably wouldn't know a provider that would have risked it that way.
Oh, wow.
But again, that's not my forte.
No.
But I wouldn't have risked that outpatient not having...
But is your tute? Forte, sixte, eighte. That's Pig Latin. Okay, back to Joseph.
Well, we'll have a special segment near the end of the show that we'll talk about some of our memories about Joan Rivers. But as I said, it is our Boogie Woogie Breakthrough Entertainment's Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll Show, all in honor of The Identical. Dave saw it. I saw it. We've got our reviews. It opened up yesterday.
Woohoo!
We've got on the inspiration for the movie. He also wrote the story. It's kind of his life. Part of it is. It's kind of a meld of two different stories you'll find out here. His name, as I said earlier, is Elvis Wade Cummins. And he's like the very first Elvis impersonator. He was actually impersonating Elvis while Elvis was still alive. Yeah.
That, which is amazing if you think about it.
He is still alive.
Yeah. So there's
lives in our hearts forever.
Yeah. Or he still might be alive.
Living with Tupac somewhere.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
Notorious B.I.G.
Notorious B.I.G. That would be a very, very... Get MJ, get Elvis, Notorious B.I.G., Tupac.
Yeah.
Get some of the...
50 Cent.
You know what? 50 Cent's alive.
Oh.
And he's not quite the legend of the others. Snoop Dogg's
Quarter.
Alive. No, but I'm just saying.
Frank
I'm just
Sinatra.
Saying. I think that would be a heck of a jam session, let me tell you.
Oh, like the Million Dollar Quartet. Remember we saw that?
But with a 2014 twist.
Oh, that would be good. Because you guys don't remember Johnny Cash and... Oh, that was Elvis.
Carl Perkins, Elvis, and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Jerry Lee. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of other movies that came out yesterday. Actually, eight of them.
Oh,
I tell you, I was amazed. I was amazed, you know, beginning at Labor Day, and it's just like kaboom.
Yeah, yeah. Got nine new movies. We're going to be reviewing eight of them, but we're going to be talking about all nine because we've got, you remember last week we previewed the remaining with the writer-director Casey LaScala. Today we've got on an actor from the film. He's the star, and his name is...
Bum, 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 bum.
Brian DeChart.
I was trying to fill in.
No, I was waiting for you to finish your drum roll there.
Oh, that wasn't a drum roll.
But
that would have been better.
See, that would have been better. Brian DeChart, he'll be joining us. He's the star of the film.
I'd love to DeChart his future.
Okay. Whatever that means. And we also have on...
You're batting a thousand, Dave. Batting a thousand.
I know.
We've also got on... you know, there's another big movie opening called Frontera. And really hot issue, hot button issue here, all about illegal immigration and, you know, crossing the border and all that stuff. And we've got on the writer and director of that one.
His name is... the writer or the writer? It's like the chart. No, I'm hearing
you're
it
still batting a thousand.
Okay. Well, maybe there are .000 is almost like it's supposed to have a one. It's supposed to have a one in front of it, baby.
Okay, Captain Morgan. But there it is, ladies and gentlemen, Captain Morgan in the studio.
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
I love it.
Wow. Oh, that was good. See, I told you he's a star. No one believed me.
Yeah.
Good humor, Eric.
Anyway, writer-director Michael Berry, you know, is what I was saying, is from Frontera. See, that's difficult to say.
Say that again.
From Frontera.
Nicely done.
The writer and director of Frontera, Michael Berry, he will be joining us in a lot of other movies, as I said you know, earlier, May in the Summer, The Longest Week, Innocence, The Last of Robin Hood, Beneath. Trailer Park Boys, Don't Legalize It, and also speaking of The Last Robin Hood, we have on a pre-recorded interview with writers-directors Richard Glatzer and Wash Westmoreland. I spoke with them a couple weeks ago, and actually quite inspirational. Can't wait for you guys to hear, you know, especially the last few questions of that.
Wow, nice. This is a jam-packed show then.
Well, yeah. Dave, do you want to announce our next week's guest?
Yeah, we have, we're going to have an interview with none other then the star, HBO real-time Bill Maher.
Yes,
what a
coup.
So
excited.
That is fantastic. And thanks to Eric for that, of course.
Oh, no, thanks to Kathleen. She worked it all.
Kathleen, you rock, girl.
Yes, you do. He is so funny. I just love that guy.
Yeah?
I mean,
he's hilarious.
And he'll be here.
Yeah, when's he going to come here?
I don't know the date. Kathleen will have to call me and tell me, but he's going to be here like...
September 27th or something?
I think it's that Saturday, actually.
Live show. Awesome, awesome, awesome. You got to see Bill Maher live.
I think it's next Saturday.
Oh, it's next Saturday.
I think so.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
And it's also our fall television preview, fall TV preview
then
next Saturday.
Then it's perfect because he's on HBO TV.
Yeah, yeah. And,
it's
you know.
The 13th, I think. No, that's when we're on. That's, I think that's his show, too.
Wow, the 13th. We'll have to check that before maybe we go off the air. Because that, I thought you said the 27th, but we'll check it out.
I probably did. I'm totally wrong.
On which one?
I mean, drinking his Captain Morgan back there. Come
no,
on
not.
Now.
Hey, that's Hair of the Dog there. Hair of the Dog.
No, I think it is the 13th, yes.
But yeah, we'll try to give that information out because you definitely got to see Bill Maher. This guy is hysterical.
And
absolutely.
I'm going to send you a lot of links to some TV pilots. You know, there's more pilots than I can possibly count, but I'm going to send you a handful of them, Dave, and your assignment is to watch a few. We've got Selfie, Red Band Society, Forever. And
a day?
Just forever. Just
I'm forever.
And A to Z, a show that I'm sure that you know, Greg and myself will really like. I haven't watched it yet.
Why wouldn't I like it?
Well, because you don't know. You're not familiar with How I Met Your Mother as much as we are. It stars Krista Milioti.
Okay, we'll say it nicely.
You met my mom?
No, here we go.
You're my
again.
Daddy?
What is this, number
He's my daddy.
Eight?
Is that possible? No, I guess not.
Have you been nipping off this bottle of rum?
Actually, you know, there's a guy in Cave Creek who says that Elvis is his daddy. Have you ever met that guy?
Yeah, I actually know the guy who wrote his book. I know Rico Austin. He also wrote a couple other books, but he gave me a copy of it, and I started reading it.
Yeah. No, I almost had him in studio, but we got someone even better.
Didn't
Elvis
they do
Wade.
DNA testing and found out that it wasn't him?
He says that he's got he has nothing to prove, and he's
a
got
singer
it
and a songwriter. Yeah,
yeah, something like that.
But I know who he is.
Yeah. So anyway, he's right here in the valley in Cave Creek, but we've got on someone even better from Nashville.
What, Priscilla Presley? We have on.
Elvis Wade Cummins.
Okay, just kidding.
The inspiration for this movie that I'm, you know, I'm interested in talking about since you saw it, and I'm curious to see what you saw, because we got a few songs from the movie on today, as well as, like I said, some songs from the real deal, Elvis Presley. But in The Identical, which opened yesterday, Blake Rayne plays an identical twin, he plays both parts, identical twin brothers, who are separated at birth during the Great Depression. Despite their very different upbringings, the boys' shared passion for music causes their lives to unknowingly intersect as they experience a powerful and mysterious connection. So one of them is given to, because the family can't afford two babies, so one is given to a very religious family, and, of course, the pastor of the church and all that, and played by Ray Liotta, and his wife is played by Ashley Judd.
Did a great job.
Yes. And so that they raise this this child to be, you know, someone who's going to be all about the church, while the other child becomes this music sensation. They call him the Dream, not the King, but the Dream. Did you know
that's
that...
That's a rapper.
The Dream is?
He's a rapper producer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't know the rap scene.
You're too old.
What up, yo? No. Holla.
No, that's Jewish thing. Challah. No. Challah bread, right?
No. Challah back.
What? Challah bread, isn't it?
Yes, hey, Dave, challah.
No. You go, challah.
Yeah, but that's H-A-L-L-A-H. This is H-O-L-L-A-H. Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, we're getting off track. Did you know that Elvis Presley was...
As usual.
Yeah, you are listening to Breakthrough Entertainment.
It is convoluted around here.
Did you know that Elvis Presley... that
was
he was
a twin.
Yeah, he was a twin. His brother was stillborn.
Oh, is that
his
what
twin
happened?
Brother was stillborn. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And so this is a kind of a pickoff. A what if?
A takeoff.
Takeoff. Yeah.
Not a pickoff.
I don't know what a pickoff is.
But
it's a takeoff on that. It's a kind of a what if scenario, if that brother had been alive, and then it also merges with Elvis Wade's story where he was singing. He was his own artist.
Is that really what people call him?
Elvis Wade. Yeah. Yeah. He's got albums and out and everything like that. He's had albums out since the 60s. And so he actually wasn't.
Since the 60s?
Yeah. He was
impersonating.
I'm not talking about the real Elvis.
He was impersonating Elvis while Elvis was still popular.
Oh,
alive.
I see. So the actor in the movie, because I saw the trailer.
No, the actor is a different one.
He's
playing. No, he's not lip syncing.
Oh,
that's Blake Rayne. He's a popular music artist.
And he looks. Oh, that's Blake Rayne?
Yeah.
I was totally confused.
Someone asked me the other day, do you know Blake Rayne? And then I went out to see the movie. I didn't even know.
Wow.
Isn't he out here right now?
No, you're talking about Blake Shelton.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Wow.
My bad. Blake Shelton.
Hey, he got one name right. Let's give him some credit.
I know. I'm getting better.
You're supposed to be knowledgeable. This is Breakthrough Entertainment.
I'm supposed to. Now you tell me. I thought I'm just entertaining.
Wow.
Okay.
But anyway,
but
so it merges.
Didn't he look like Elvis in the movie?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the eyes especially, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I was looking at Elvis.
And even in Elvis Wade also looks at the time, looked exactly like Elvis. And, you know, he was singing at the time when Elvis was alive. He was doing his own act.
Yeah.
And then one day someone, stood up and said, hey, I want to request an Elvis song. So he sang an Elvis song so over the top. Everyone loved it. And then all of a sudden he became this, like, tribute act. And, so you'll see scenes in the movie where he wants to sing his own music, but, his producer says, no, you're an Elvis act. You have to sing Elvis music. So it's kind of a melding of two stories. Dave, what did you think of The Identical?
Well, I thought the best thing about it, I thought, was Ray Liotta's acting. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, he did a great job.
I thought the best role he's ever played, it was out of character for him from some of the evil roles he's played in the past.
Oh, he's usually a mobster kind of guy.
But he was incredible in this role. I thought it was good. I thought it was a little slow leading up to some of the more important parts. But I think the music kept me interested. And what's going to happen next kept me interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give it a thumbs up, but I didn't. There, it wasn't as profound as I think it could have been. I don't think some of the loose ends were tied up, but I did like the ending. I did like towards. There's some really interesting scenes that happened towards the end. I think that really made the movie a thumbs up, because if it ended halfway, or if the second half was like the first half, I probably wouldn't have given a thumbs up.
Okay.
But I thought the second half recovered the whole movie and restored its good good qualities, and I will give it a thumbs up.
So a mild thumbs up.
Yeah, I'd say more mild. Now, if I saw it again, maybe I would like it better the second time.
Was Satnin in it?
Who?
Satnin.
Who's that?
Satnin was the big lump of flesh on the back of his mama's neck that he liked to rub.
No, I never saw that part.
That's true.
Yep. It was about a minister and a wife. They hardly ever did it.
Wow.
Well, I will tell you that when we were talking in the car, he had said it was a mild thumbs up. But then when we were actually discussing it, because you know I'm a huge Elvis fan.
Yeah, of course, by your watch there. Elvis is on her watch. Elvis is on her chest. I mean, her necklace. And Elvis is...
Tattoo?
Really? I didn't know that.
Elvis is on her ears, earrings.
I do have pictures of that. Oh, okay.
And I have rooms full of Elvis at my San Diego home, and I have a animatronic head that sings and talks and
that's weird. Everything.
It is weird. I walked in, creepy. Elvis everywhere. Everywhere.
I love him.
So he's talking about this and
so as he was talking to me about it and I started to bring up that, oh well, you know, Elvis was a twin and his twin passed away.
I started
away
to like it better.
And you know, his mom, he was always trying to please his mom and make up for the fact because I think he felt responsible somewhat or that she kinda held it against him. So anyway, I want to see it. And then he actually said, you know what, maybe it's more than just a mild thumbs up because I am talking about it and reliving it and thinking, oh, you know, that was good.
And as I'm thinking about that, you're right. Like Ray Liotta as the minister, you know, he says, you're breaking my heart. You know, when he wanted to do his calling, he meaning Elvis or the identical. And so there were some good messages. Follow your calling. But you know, some pretty profound scenes there, and that's what makes, for me, movies great. So as I'm thinking more about it, I think there are more profound scenes than I realized.
Well, then, Dave, I'm going to take your mild thumbs up, and I'm going to raise you a very strong thumbs
good
up.
Good for you. Come on, a round of applause.
Yes.
The identical is no cheap imitation. You know, it's the real deal in terms of entertainment value. You know, it's got rockin' music, a nostalgic atmosphere, authentic performances, especially from Blake Rain, who definitely looks and sounds like Elvis. It's kind of a faith-based musical drama. Definitely has those undertones to it. And like I said, it's the real deal in terms of not only entertainment value, but also thought provocation and emotional resonance. I thought, especially the end. I know the scene that you're talking about.
Spoiler alert.
I'm not going to tell you. When Blake Rain is having a discussion with
with
his father.
But there's another scene in there that is fantastic. Towards end.
We'll have to talk about it off air because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, because that
the
would
listeners.
Be a spoiler alert. But fantastic scene.
Yes.
And very meaningful.
I know with a mother as well. We'll talk about it off the air.
That's another one. Wow. Yeah, I love this movie.
See?
It's not a mild thumbs up anymore. I'm doubling it. It's a three thumbs up.
Well, I thought that this definitely took me back in time. I wasn't even there. I can imagine that you really felt just like taken back in time. It's genuinely affecting. It encourages you to use your talent, whatever it may be, to bring joy to anyone and everyone within your reach. And you know what, Dave? I thought that it moves both your heart and your feet.
Yes, nicely said.
And
by
your
the way,
soul.
I do remember when I was 7 or something, Elvis was in the army, and I did see him. I was with my dad, actually. I was 3. And I was pre-1. But I did see him. My dad said, hey, that's Elvis. And he was at one of the hotels. Yeah. And the crowd, I mean, everywhere, they're just running after him.
Yeah. And
he was the king.
Yes, he was.
And how about that scene when the real, you know, Dream saw he was actually in the audience
at
one of the performances
cool.
of the other version.
That was really cool.
Identical.
Yeah.
And, you know, gave him a standing ovation. And so he is going to be joining us very soon.
Elvis Wade Cummins is coming up.
Yes. And, you know, taking us into our break is from the identical Bebop and Baby.
Bebop and Baby.
Sung by Blake Rain.
has a great voice.
Yeah, I
he's
want
a
this
popular
soundtrack.
Country Western guy.
I believe a faith-based
Rockabilly.
Singer as well.
He's really good.
Well, you know, Elvis, big roots in gospel music.
Yeah, that's right.
I believe he can race cars, too.
Oh, he's very good. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. This is the Boogie Woogie, what is it?
Rock and Roll Show.
Bebop and Baby. Oh, yeah, this is our Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll Show, all in honor of the identical.
And we'll be right back. You're gonna think that she's a twin. Hey, girl, slow down. I wanna get to know you. I know that I can show you. You're the girl for me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Bebop and Baby.
Are you a restaurant owner who panics if your AC goes down in the dog days of summer? Extreme Cooling finds that equipment usually breaks down unnecessarily, costing restaurant owners time and money. For this reason, Extreme Cooling promotes and specializes in proactive service plans designed specifically to keep all of your refrigeration equipment operating properly, as designed, all year long. Extreme Cooling is here to help you with all of your refrigeration needs, knowing that saving money is your top concern. Our number is 623-810-8513. When you want to start saving money, call Extreme Cooling. Do you suffer from not having enough fun? We could take care of that. Pino's Palette is the upscale paint and bring your own beverage studio located off of Tatum and Shea. We're a group painting class where you can bring your own alcohol or non-alcoholic beverage, and our trained artists will lead you through step by step in recreating the featured painting of the night. No art experience necessary. Drink in one hand and paintbrush in another. We are a great night out for any occasion. Pino's Palette. Paint, drink, and have fun.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
More than 60,000 people are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease each year, thousands of them here in the Valley. Thankfully, one of the nation's top treatment facilities is located in the heart of Phoenix, the Muhammad Ali Parkinson Center. Parkinson Network of Arizona raises funds to help patients and families receive the crucial educational and activity-based classes offered through the center. 1480 and Parkinson Network of Arizona invite you to become involved and make a difference in the lives of those with Parkinson's. Go online to ParkinsonNetworkAZ.org to find out about upcoming events, including the largest Parkinson's walk in the state, Walk the Fight, and learn how your donation stays local to provide life-changing opportunities. Once again, that's ParkinsonNetworkAZ.org.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Joseph J. Erdo, Greg Isaac, Eric Reinert, and Trisha. This is our boogie woogie
rock and roll.
Show.
Yeah.
Today.
Breaker Entertainment's Boogie Woogie Rock and Roll Show. And, you know, is that Elvis Presley singing? Because it sounds like it.
Oh, sounds exactly like him.
Yeah.
It's probably not, though.
No, I think it sounds better than Elvis.
It does sound better than Elvis.
You must have a suspicious mind.
I do. Well, maybe our guest can tell us who's singing. His name is Elvis Wade Cummins. Thank you so much for joining us on Breakthrough Entertainment.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You know, so that wasn't Elvis, was it?
No, that was me.
What a wow. Great voice.
Well, actually, that means it was Elvis.
Yeah, it was Elvis.
Well,
yeah.
I guess you could call it you were half right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, we just gave two great big thumbs up to The Identical, a great movie, and, you know, it's inspired by your life. You wrote the story, so, you know, Elvis Wade, tell us a little bit about when you started performing. I was trying to fill our, you know, other co-hosts in studio here in on how you basically were a singer in your own right while Elvis was still alive, right?
Yeah, I started singing professionally when I was 13 years old, and but the Elvis show was an accident. There were no Elvis impersonators. I was the first, and the books give me credit for that too. You know, I did a lot of God bless me with a 4-octave range, which is
wow.
You know, majorly unusual for a man, especially, and so I was able to do many voices, including Elvis, Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck, Roy Orbison, Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons, Gene Pitney.
Gary Puckett, Gary Puckett and Union Jack.
Yes, Gary Puckett. Yeah, I forgot about him. I look like Elvis from the time I was 13 years old on. It was uncanny how much I favored him. And so, you know, I used to do an imitation when I was like 8 years old because my sisters were big fans. And so we were playing with one of the top show groups in the country, and someone asked for an Elvis song. And I said, guys, I used to do an imitation of Elvis. You want to have some fun? And they said, yeah, sure. So I said, back me up. And I grabbed the microphone, and I did One Night With You. And it tore the house down, and they wouldn't let me stop for 45 minutes, and the rest is history.
Wow.
And, of course, you know, Elvis came to see my show back in 72. Mayborn Axton, who wrote his first number one hit, Hoyt Axton's mom, wrote Heartbreak Hotel. And she brought him to see me. You know, I used to, promoters would put me in the same towns back when the last 9 years of Elvis's life. I would work the same cities. He would sell out immediately, and I would sell out too, because they would advertise, if you couldn't go see the best thing, come see the next best thing.
Wow.
And, you know, then of course when Elvis died, Elvis impersonators were hatched like flies. You know, I mean, there's got to be, I read an article the other day, it was so funny. I said, that's so true. If Elvis impersonators keep increasing at the same rate, in 3 more years, 2 out of every 3 people on the face of the earth is going to be one.
Well, you know, I became an Elvis fan just right after his death. And mm-hmm. And of the young Elvis, because I started to investigate more. But it was interesting when I went to Graceland, the number of, you know, 3-year-old, 4-year-old kids dressed as Elvis I think Michael Jackson's going to be in the same way, where it's just like, you know, even in death, these performers are just too big to ever go away.
Right.
Not in a bad way too big, but too big to ever leave our hearts. In fact, I think Elvis has become even more popular.
Right, he has. And you have a whole generation that has discovered, you know, you guys probably would know this. I feel sorry for the younger generation today because their music is... You know,
you can say it. It sucks.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't want to say that. I'm glad you said it. But I call it rap crap.
Oh yes.
You know, those are people that can't sing, so they talk. But however, a lot of people that can sing today can't sing today, and they just tune them up in the studios. I mean, it's just become such a joke, you know. I mean, I would never mention names, but, you know, I don't know what happened to the music business. It's, you know, it used to be about, you know, Elvis was a great singer. He was a great singer. He was a great performer.
He didn't need the auto-tuner.
Right, exactly. And you guys understand that. And 90% of the things that are done today in concerts are, they're not live. These guys got microphones on, but they're dead. They're live, but they got a sound man out there that pushes a button and it mutes it, and the singer's voice is on there, tuned already, perfect pitch, and that's the reason why they sound so good. And as soon as the song's over with, they punch it, and singer talks, and you hear them, and you think you're listening to a live show, and you're listening to canned music with somebody up there dancing around.
It's like plastic surgery. I mean,
exactly.
I think you're right. That's what came to mind when you said that. Yeah, I agree. I mean, just the old musicians, their passion, it was just them and their instrument.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much better.
Well, and yes, Elvis didn't start as a performer either. I mean, Elvis was shy.
Right, exactly. But he had a great talent.
Oh,
and so many of the artists of those days, you know, I have a granddaughter, and she loves that music. She loves all of the old music. You know, she loves the 50s, 60s, and even the 70s. She loves all that music. And she said, our music sucks. That's what she said today. And I said, well, baby, you have an ear. That's great, you know. And she does have an ear. I feel so sorry for this younger generation because they have, you know, I listen to some of this stuff and I go, you know, how could you possibly ever sing that stuff back? I tell you, I know we're getting off the subject, but I seen this TV commercial on the other night on television, and it's advertising some car. And this guy is so far out of tune, he's screaming the words. And I recognized some of the words to it, and I kept saying, what song is that? And I realized it's My Way.
Oh, yeah, Frank Sinatra.
Is it the Sid Vicious version?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I think I heard that.
Somebody needs to take that guy, whoever it is.
He's dead.
Take him and hang him on the square. And tell him whoever gave him money for singing lessons should be shot.
Well, it's probably the Sid Vicious version. He was in the Sex Pistols. He died of a heroin overdose.
Oh,
God, that was horrible. How could that? If I took something like that to the radio station and said, "Listen, this is my my latest recording," they would throw me out of the studio.
So many things. Everything's different. Well, let me ask you this: will it ever come back? Sometimes the old will come back.
Yes. You know, I think through the identical, a lot of it is. You know, these songs are melodical. They're done well. They're done through the times. And
it is Sid Vicious.
We really, really believe that people are going to love the soundtrack from this movie.
Yes.
And, you know, who knows what, you know, I said this, and I don't want to give anybody an idea because I would love to do it myself, but I'd love to go out and get four young, good-looking guys that can really sing, a bass singer, and let them do doo-wop, but an up-style doo-wop thing, 50s and 60s type stuff. They would kill these kids.
It would be that would be awesome. I would love to see that too. Why don't you do that? It's your idea.
Well,
I think you should do it, and we'll help promote it.
Is this,
there you go.
Is
there
you go. Is this the commercial you're thinking of?
That's it.
He says, "Yeah,
that's it."
Yeah, that's Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry, Sex Pistols. Well, I'm sorry. That guy.
They weren't known for being very, very good.
No, good name, but that's it.
Oh my goodness.
Let me ask you this: when Elvis died on August 16th, I forgot. I think it was 77.
Mm-hmm.
How did this personally impact you?
It was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, a lot of people don't realize what I went through during that time period. I was working in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I was doing a concert there. It sold out immediately, and I refused to do the show. But they had 10,000 people outside of the venue trying to get in. And when everybody explained to me how important it was, I said it's sacrilegious to do a show on Elvis. Now you got to remember, I was the only guy really around doing the show, And they said, these people are clinging to anything. And when I went on stage, they gave me a standing ovation, and women started passing out. They were lifting them up on their hands and moving them back so the ambulances could. They were calling ambulances to the area.
It was the first time people were crowd surfing.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That's right. That's exactly right. But it was, they weren't watching me. They were clinging to Elvis. And it was like being in someone else's body. And from that point on, I started drawing crowds of up to 44,000 people.
Wow.
I played to many, many crowds, 30,000 to 40,000 people that I drew. I would have to have 25 and 30 armed guards with me at each show. And I didn't want them, but I had my life threatened. I had I would step out and people would mob me. I had women that actually knocked the policeman down and mobbed me on stage and smothered me to death and had to be show stopped and pull them off of me and the lights turned out and threatened us. I went through so many things. It was chaos. Wow. It was unbelievable.
But what a blessing and gift that you had this gift to be able so the world can continue sharing their great love for the King.
Well, it was an honor on my behalf. I loved his music. I never tried to be him on stage. I'd look like him. I could dance like him. I could sing like him. But I never went into the character that these guys do today where they just try to, you know, I'm not Elvis. There was only one Elvis Presley. He died, and you're not it. You know, you didn't come back. But I, you know, I was just me on stage. I'm an entertainer, and you know, I have a voice of my own, and so that's what I gave them, and the people loved it. They ate it up, and we broke attendance records every place we were at. In fact, I was there in Phoenix with the Phoenix Symphony Orchestra a few years ago.
Wow!
We played Symphony Hall. Yeah, I've done 20 major symphonies throughout the United States.
Are you coming back?
Well, I'd love to come back. I hope they ask me back. You know, you sort of got. I was, you know, with the Pops. We sold out Symphony Hall in the off season. We were there for two nights. Sold it out one of the nights. And the first night we were almost sold out, and the second night we were totally sold out. And they told me that was phenomenal, since they were only used to getting 900 to 1,100 people maximum on during that time of year. And we had 2,550 people.
Wow,
it's just what it seats. But I'd love to come back.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think also what you were just talking about, the fact that you loved and appreciated Elvis as an artist, that has to come through when you are paying tribute to him through your performances. And that kind of sincerity comes through. And that was one thing that I could say about Elvis, is that there was so much sincerity in him. And I think what you went through with the mob scenes and everything, you know, that's what he lived with every day. And when people say, you know, oh, you know, and it was a waste that he went the way he did. But similar to Michael Jackson, everybody wants a piece of you. And both of them were inherently shy and yet phenomenal performers who could put it out there on the stage, and everybody wanted a piece of them. Were you originally inherently shy, or were you always a performer up on stage ready for it?
No, I was originally shy also. It's growing up as a child, I was very shy, and I did the same thing. My mom played like 11 instruments. My dad played like 5 or 6. They both sang, and I was the 7th of 7 children, and we were very poor. You know, I'm from Tennessee, and so I had a similar, you know, type Southern background, but I was very shy in high school. I always laughed and said, I look back at my pictures now, and if I'd known I was that good looking, I would have been stuck up.
Now, I didn't want to let this pass without asking you, when Elvis came to your show, did you get to interact with him at all?
He gave me a standing ovation.
Wow.
I knew he was coming. And
nothing like a little pressure.
Yeah, that was pressure, unreal. But it was a strange situation. He was in Nashville doing a album recording. You know, he recorded at RCA Studio B here, and he was recording. And of course, I knew that he had known about me for a long time, and he was amused that I was making a living doing just him, playing the same times. It was this guy dragging around on my footsteps, you know. But anyway, you know, JD and the Stamps. So when he played the Silver Dome in Pontiac, Michigan, the largest crowd that he ever played. Well, we sold out too. We had two nights in Detroit, and JD and the Stamps came the first night. They came into town a day early and tried to get in, brought 15 people from Elvis's show and couldn't even get in to see my show.
Ooh, wow.
So they had to come back, but they came back, praise God, and they got them in, and that was the first time I had an interaction with them. And they actually got up and sang with me on stage and just thrilled the crowd, unbelievable. But Elvis, you know, JD and I had long talks afterwards, and, you know, he told me, yeah, Elvis knows all about you, and he thinks it's great and so on and so forth. And I said, he's not mad at me or nothing like that. No, he thinks it's great. Well, he came to see me in Nashville. Mayborn Axton brought him. She wrote Heartbreak Hotel. And so they told me, you can't tell anyone. Well, in Nashville, the clubs, big nightclubs, have a VIP section that they rope off. And they had that thing roped off. And every time the back door would open, the place would go nuts. And everyone knew he was coming. They come to me and said, did you tell him? I go, I didn't tell him. Not even my band, I didn't tell. So what they did was they waited till the show started. And they brought him up in a limo with about four or five of his entourage and Mayborn Axton. They had a hat and a beard on him and brought him in after the lights were turned down and set him right in the middle of the crowd. And everybody's watching this other section. And he sat right there in the middle of them. And so when the show was over with, they turned the house twice a night. They did back then. And they would have sold-out shows. And so they would automatically turn the lights up to get, because they had, you know, 500 people standing outside waiting to get in. And when they turned the lights up like they normally did, they were afraid that they would, you know, I mean, even with everything he had on, they would know who he was. And so the guys just grabbed their arms around him, and they just pushed out. Right out the front door into the limousine and gone. But then he called me back, and the guy tried to get to me. I had about 300 people around the autograph table, and he was trying to squeeze through the crowd, and I'm signing autographs and everything. And he finally got to me. He says, "Listen, Elvis is on the phone, wants to talk to you." And I go, "Oh my God!" And I'm trying to get back to the phone, trying to get through all these people. And they're sticking pens in my hands and papers and albums and trying to get me some. Just sign this before you go. No, just sign. Let me take this one picture and I'm going. I gotta go. By the time I get the phone, you know, he'd been hanging on the phone for 20 minutes. He just hung up.
Oh, wow.
I know. But the great thing about it was Mayborn Axton. I became friends with her later, and she told me all about what Elvis said to him. And then, of course, Dee Presley, his stepmother, after Elvis died, she moved to Nashville. We became close friends. And she toured with me as a press agent for 5 years all over the world.
Oh, wow.
And so she talked to me many, many times about what Elvis said and that's how she contacted me when she moved to Nashville. She said, I knew that you lived here and Elvis talked about it. And he said, you know, and she said, I just had to contact you and tell you how much he loved your show. And I went and met her and her entourage and had dinner with them. And then we became friends, you know, and so my life has been blessed in so many ways. I give God the glory because he's blessed me so much. This little country boy from Podunk nowhere, you know, I've been all over the world.
Well, you're also a blessing to so many. And did you ever see Elvis in person, like at Las Vegas, perhaps?
I saw him twice.
Did you?
Believe it or not, I saw him two times in person, and of course loved it both times. I thought he was great. You know, I didn't. You know, I think it was not meant for us to meet face-to-face because they tell me now that you know, people that are really, really fans of another person are disappointed and their bubble gets burst, you know, lots of times when they meet the person. And I don't know why it never happened, but it didn't. I just never met him face-to-face. I was 20 rows back at one of the concerts I was at. With him and when he performed, and the other one I was sitting over on the side in the balcony, but I never got to meet him.
And yet you guys made that connection when he was in the audience, you were on the stage, and vice versa.
Yes, right. Well, it's like in The Identical. He gave me, you know, if you guys have seen The Identical, then the standing ovation that the artist gets is basically the same thing. I mean, that's right out of my right out of the pages of my life.
Ah, oh, you're giving me chills.
Well, tell us a little bit about your involvement with The Identical. It's partially inspired by your own life, and you wrote the story, right?
Right, exactly. Yes, a lot of people say, "Well, this is your life story," and I tell them, "No, it's not my life story. It's fictional, totally fictional, but it has my life threaded in through it. It's woven all the way through the whole movie, and it's a very, very high impact movie. I've seen it four times now, and I promised myself. I said, you know, I'm not going to cry. I mean, how can you cry when you wrote it? You know what it's going to say, but I cried like a baby. I mean, uncontrollably every time I've seen it. It's just so impactful and powerful, and but everybody else has the same impact too. So maybe it's not just me. I thought, well, maybe it's just me because I associate with what happens in the movie.
But the
reviews I'm getting from everyone is people are saying best movie I ever seen. I couldn't stop crying. It felt the best I've ever felt, cried in my life at a movie, but cried so much. And, you know, I'm just overwhelmed by the response.
Yes, and as I said, Dave and I both gave it a very strong thumbs up here on Breakthrough Entertainment.
And now I'm curious, what was the driving force or the factor, because it is fiction, and that you've interwoven your life throughout it, and of course there's a lot of parallels to the other Elvis, his life. What was your driving force? What caused you to write this story? Where did what was the seed that germinated into this beautiful story?
I got to tell you, you know, you guys probably, you know, some people out there, your audience may laugh about this, but I'm a very spiritual person. I love the Lord. And, you know, I have a very special relationship with the Lord. And I'm not a writer. I mean, I write music. I'm a songwriter. And I write music, but I never thought, I used to always tell people, I laugh. People would try to give me books all the time. I know you guys probably all had somebody, oh, you got to read this book. I finished it, and you won't be able to put it down. This is the greatest thing. And I would say, you know what? I don't read. I don't read books. I'm just not a reader. I you know, my life is so involved. And I would always laugh and say, there's only two kinds of people in the world. And they would go, what's that? And I would say, people that read books and people that write books. And I don't read books. I write books. And, of course, I didn't write books. I laughed because I never wrote a book. But I said that for years and would not take a book that people would try to give me. I said, don't waste it. Give it to someone who will read it. It'll go in my trash can if you give it to me. But and here I was sitting at the computer not knowing why, but this story was coming to me. And I started writing it, and then I couldn't finish. I got more into it, and the scenes would come to me in my mind. The words of everybody talking would come to me in my mind, and I would type it out. And as I would laugh, and I would cry, and I would laugh, and I would cry, and as I was writing it, and when I finished it, I thought, wow. You know, I don't know if this will impact other people like it impacts me. And I let a couple people read it, and they go, oh, my goodness. I have never read anything like that in my life. You thought about doing something with it. And I thought, well, you know, they're just my friends. So I sent it out to somebody that I knew that was a playwriter. And she told me, she said, it may take me 3 months to read it, but I'll read it. But I'm so busy. And I said, okay. So she called me back the next day and said, oh, my God, I couldn't put it down. I read it one day. I said, you're kidding me. And she said, no. She said, you have got a phenomenal piece of work here. Yes. So from that, I took a step of faith and sent it out to two companies. And a year later, one of them called me back and said, it's been sitting on our desk. We never read it. We had two other movies we were going to film. And one of the producers read your up to page 50, and he said he was on the floor bawling like a baby three different times in 50 pages. And he called me in, and I read it, and we have got to meet with you within the next 48 hours. We don't care what it takes. And the rest is history.
Yeah. City of Peace Films, right?
City of Peace Films, right. And And Ray Liotta had the same effect, you know. I mean, when they call me on the phone and tell me, guess who's going to play Reese Wade? I go, I don't have a clue. And they told me Ray Liotta, I almost dropped the phone. And who's going to play Louise Wade? I said, who? And they said, Ashley Judd. I'm going, no, you guys are lying to me. Now tell me the truth. No, we're telling you the truth. And Ray Liotta told me the story. He said, Wade, he said, when I got your script, he said, it sat on my desk. He said, I was in the middle of a movie. And he said, I came in at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'd been filming late. And he said, I was so tired. And I went down to my desk and I picked up. He said, I thought if I just read 20 minutes of something, it'll make me sleepy and I'll be able to sleep. And he said, I only intended on reading one or two pages. He said, I couldn't put it down. He said, you know, I was adopted. I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, yes. And he said, I was on the floor crying, sobbing. And he said, I did not put the script down until I finished it all the way through at 4 o'clock in the morning. He said, and at 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I was calling and texting my manager and my agent. And I was telling them, I don't care what it takes. I want in this movie.
And by the way, he did a fantastic job.
Oh, did he not knock it out?
Best performance I've ever seen him do.
Oh, you know, I the owner of City of Peace Films, I talked to him, I spoke with him last night, and he said Ray was on, he's been on all these big, huge shows, but he was on the Glenn Beck Show. And he said, no one is asking this question. He said, this is going to thrill you. And I said, well, I can't wait to hear. He said, Glenn, ask him, what of all the movies you've performed in, you know, Field of Dreams, Goodfellas, and all of them that you've performed in, what's your favorite movie? And he said, The Identical is my favorite movie I've ever been in.
Wow. Wow.
And I said, oh, my goodness. You know, wow. What can I say? Wow. I don't know, guys. I wish I had an explanation. All I can do is give glory to God and say, thank you, Jesus.
Yes.
You know,
yeah, and you,
for giving. He could have gave the story to anyone, but he gave it to me.
Yeah, and you are a spiritual man, and it's a spiritual movie as well. You know, I said it earlier, but you know, it's a very genuinely affecting movie. It encourages you to use your talent, whatever it may be, to bring joy to anyone and everyone within your reach. I think that's exactly what you do. And you know,
follow
so,
your passion.
Yeah. So
yes.
Where can we? Because we really want you here in Phoenix. So you got to stay in touch with me. We need you in studio. But in the meantime, where can people find out more information about you? Follow you, that kind of stuff.
Well, of course, I'm on Facebook now. You know, golly, you know, my schedule. You know, I'm an ordained minister now. I got ordained in 2001, and so I do a lot of ministry outside of the church, some in the church too, but you know, I've written two more, and I'm going to call them movies because I believe they will become movies. And you know, all I can say is, you know, my schedule right now is filling up with everything under the sun. People are, you know, are suddenly, you know, calling me for everything you know, that you can imagine. So I'm really praying that that, you know, that I can do a little bit of everything. I love entertaining and singing, and I hope somebody hears the Phoenix Symphony from the Phoenix Symphony and says, you know, we need to get Elvis Wade back again and sell out. I like to call myself the writer of The Identical and the original Identical, because I was the original Identical. And and let me tell you, Blake Rain is a super nice guy. He knocked it out of the park too. The guy that plays the role in the movie, mm-hmm. He's a great guy. And I spoke with him again last night, and I told him, I said, hang on to your pants. Your career is about to go right off the charts. The women go nuts over that guy. I mean, you know, he's a really nice looking guy, and he's single. Yeah. And you know, the girls go nuts over him.
Well, they go nuts for you too, Elvis Wade Cummins. We're coming up to a hard break, so you know, can we get a trademark thank you?
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Elvis Wade Cummins.
Yes.
You are
thanks
delightful,
for calling me.
And we'll have you on again.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome.
And this is Elvis Wade Cummins singing us out of this segment. with How Great Thou Art. And listen to this voice.
Wow.
No other words but wow.
And that is Elvis Wade Cummings. Wow, you got to see the Denticle. Get out there now, today. Don't miss it. And then see the Mercury in the finals tomorrow. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX. We'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
This is 1480 KPA.